Hello. Well, Airbnb are at it again with advertising that we think is just a wee bit misleading.
And another major building has had its blanket ban on pets overturned.
And later on, we're going to look at the worst neighbours you could ever possibly have. I'm Jimmy Thompson.
And I'm Sue Williams.
And this is the Flat Chat Wrap.
Happening with Airbnb now?
Well, they're running ads in local newspapers. They're basically saying that if new regulations come in, no ordinary people are going to be able to afford to go on holiday.
And how do they make that out?
Well, that's a very good question. It's just an ad directed at Planning Minister Rob Stokes. You know, it's a happy family playing on the beach, and they are going to be denied this pleasure when the new regulations come in. Now, I am speculating that what they're really complaining about is the fire regulations.
Oh, these are the expenses they're going to have to go to get the Airbnb homes up to a proper standard where they're considered safe.
Yes. I mean, and there's two aspects of the proposed regulations. There's actually a third aspect, which is the code of conduct, but we can pretty much ignore that because, as will a lot of the people who are renting or letting Airbnbs. But the two things are the registry and the fire regulations. And the fire regulations, I think, in an odd way, are going to have the biggest impact.
Well, I think we talked to, when we were talking about whether these, the effect of these coming in, we talked to some fire experts who said it may cost the average homeowner about $1,000 or a little bit more to add in integrated smoke alarms and fire blankets and heat sensors in kitchens and alarms in corridors, that kind of thing. $1,000 isn't very much when you look at the average Airbnb rental price.
Really. No, it isn't. And that's the point I'm making online in the Flat Chat column this week. But what it will do is flush out a lot of, especially renters who are subletting on Airbnb or and other, you know, rental. It's not just Airbnb. We have to keep stressing that. They've just become the brand name that refers to holiday lets. But people who have, they've rented a property and they've let it on Airbnb and they're making a profit on the difference between what they pay and what they get.
Now, if they, tenants won't be able to make substantial alterations to their homes.
Not without the knowledge and permission of their, you know, their landlords. And a lot of landlords may not even know that their property's been listed. And some of them who are quite happy to get the regular rent income may draw the line at work being done to put in smoke alarms and signage and things like that, because when they want to either move back in there or sell the place, well, it's going to look like a hotel.
Because it'll have a map on the wall that you always see in hotels when you how to get out of here quickly and exit signs, I suppose, that kind of thing. You don't really want that in your home if it's just you, because you kind of know how to get out quickly.
You should do. But that's the issue. I think that the cost is itself, you know, it works out. In fact, you wrote a story about this for the Sydney Morning Herald, and the cost for a two-bedroom apartment is going to be a little bit over $1,000. Well, we put that over, it's 26 weeks, 180 nights. So spread that over your 26 weeks, and you're looking at about $40 a week. So that's kind of getting into the territory where people are going, well, can I put the rent at an attractive level? But I think the main thing is the people who are unofficially letting and the people who are thinking, oh, I might just give this a go and see how it goes.
Who have to pay that money up front, and suddenly it just feels like a bit of a big investment.
Yeah. And then there's the people who are thinking, well, I'm going to go away for a couple of months. I'll rent out my flat on Airbnb or Stays or all these other ones that are popping up. And they will be thinking, you know, that's just too much hassle.
I can understand that.
And I think there's another aspect to this, which is the register. Everywhere on the planet that wants to bring in a register, Airbnb are fighting different ways. But as we spoke about the last time we discussed Airbnb here, that they'd spent somewhere in the region of $6 million campaigning in New Jersey to stop them bringing in a register there, and lost.
Yeah.
And that's going to be significant, because as soon as you bring in a register, then people who haven't been paying tax, for instance, people who shouldn't have been letting on Airbnb, but, you know, their bylaws don't allow it, but they've kind of snuck past. All these sort of fringe dwellers suddenly are exposed. And that hits Airbnb. It hits the whole holiday rental market.
Sure. Those probably go to a smaller, different platform, don't they? Maybe a less well-known kind of outlet rather than Airbnb.
Or
another outlet which perhaps favours registration, like Stays, I think, are in favour of registration.
They say they're in favour, for sure. Mm. But, you know, what happened in Japan last year was that they brought in a registry and the number of listings dropped by 80%, which is huge. And, you know, there's a number of factors at play there. A lot of them were unofficial and, you could say, illegal. But some of them were people who thought, oh, yeah, when I get round to it. They didn't realise that the government was watching very closely, and the letting agencies were complying. So if they didn't have a registration number, they were just dropping. They had dropped the listing off their websites.
Yeah. So that's not going to have a significant monetary effect, is it? That's not. But it's just going to have that big effect of getting, moving people out.
Yeah, it's the old thing of the ordinary families, you know, these families who want to have their seaside holiday, which they're entitled to. Some of them maybe used to live by the seaside.
Before they were forced out by Airbnb rentals.
I don't think it's the money that's the big issue here. I think it's exposure. And I think also when the numbers drop, because, you know, there's a relatively small amount of money per let that of the people who are casuals, you know, and unofficial and, you know, on the fringe. But there are so many of them that that's a big chunk of money that is coming into the holiday letting industry that won't be coming in anymore or won't be coming in as much. Mm. So, you know, a combination of the fire regulations and the registry, that's going to make a big difference, I think.
Sure. It'd be nice just to get it sorted, wouldn't it, really? I'm fed up of talking about Airbnb, really.
Well, I thought it was very funny in your story that you quoted Julian Crowley, the spokesperson for Airbnb, saying the government can't just change the rules halfway through things. You know, people have got used to this idea that they're allowed to rent their homes without all these fire regulations. And you think, hang on a minute, what about all the people who rented or bought a home believing it was going to be in a residential building, in a building that says, you know, this must not be used for holiday letting? And then suddenly we've got to cope with that. So, you know, it's one rule for them and another rule for everyone else.
And as well, you'd think we'd learn our lesson. I mean, we've had horrendous bushfires that have had a terrible property cost and a cost of stress and anxiety. We have terrible cladding on buildings, which is really dangerous. You kind of think we'd want a position where we'd really want to minimise any fire risks whatsoever.
Yeah.
You know, and we wouldn't mind paying $1,000 per home for it.
No, we shouldn't. And I mean, you think of all the people in the buildings with cladding on it who've been told, you know, they're going to have to pay 30, 40, 50,000 per unit to take the cladding off their buildings. And then we've got people who just want to make a profit out of their apartments who are whinging about having to pay $1,000. It's not going to wash, I don't think.
No. And we talk about the have and the have-nots. Well, I don't think we can talk about Airbnb letters as the real have-nots.
No, they are not ordinary people. Not the kind of ordinary people I know, anyway.
Well, some of them are, but a lot of them aren't. Right, a lot of them are doing it as a commercial enterprise.
Well, yeah, the majority are apparently are people who have more than one apartment to let. So I wish I was that ordinary. When we come back, we're going to talk about the latest developments in the pet bylaws saga. That's after this. Okay, Sue, you've been chasing up dogs and cats in apartment blocks. What's been going on?
Trying to herd them. No, it's interesting. We've talked before about one building in Sydney, in King's Cross, where some pet owners challenged the blanket bylaws banning pets. They won, but there's an appeal going on at the moment. But in the meantime, one of Sydney's biggest and most prestigious and probably richest buildings has always had a no pets bylaw since it was first opened. Somebody bought into the building with a pet and moved in. And she said that her pet was dying, her dog was dying, wasn't very well at all, and she expected him to die quickly. Happily, little Angus, the schnauzer, didn't die, and so the executive committee of the building, of the Horizon Building in Darlinghurst, took her to court to try and evict her and Angus. Well, not evict her, really, but evict Angus.
Right.
And sensationally this week, they lost that case.
All right.
The senior member, NCAT, said that the blanket ban on pets was unconscionable and unreasonable. And basically, in his judgment, said that maybe only in future small strata buildings should be allowed to ban pets, but big, large strata complexes shouldn't be able to.
Now, to be fair, going from your reports on this, the Horizon Building has solidly and always been against pets.
That's right. They've had a number of AGMs where motions have been put to the owners to allow pets. Those motions have always been roundedly lost.
Right.
So the owners consistently say they don't want pets in the building. They now seem to be in the position of being forced to have pets, really. Well, not individually, of course, but allow pets in the building.
But there was also a complication in this that I think the woman concerned said that she'd been told off the record that, you know, as long as she didn't rub their noses in it, she'd be able to keep her dog.
Yeah, she alleges that she was told if she was very quiet about it and very discreet, then people might look the other way. And undoubtedly there are other pets in the building as well, with owners who haven't been prepared to make such a fuss, and they've been continuing along happily. But, you know, the question is, should you have to sneak your pet in and out of a building, really? I mean, that's what the pet owners will say. Whereas the people in charge of running the building will say, well, we just don't want pets and we've voted against pets and we shouldn't be forced to have pets now.
Right.
And very soon, I think they've got a general meeting coming up. And it looks as though the building, because they are kind of quite a wealthy building and there's lots of lawyers in that building, will vote to go to appeal. And I think they're planning to take this all the way to the very top.
Right.
And then they say it will be less about pets, really, but it will be more about strata owners and the freedom of strata owners to come up with their own bylaws.
Right, which has already been tested in the case of Airbnb, funnily enough.
Mm.
You know, where the government here in New South Wales is bringing in laws that will allow us to have bylaws. In Victoria, the government brought in laws that quite clearly said they couldn't have bylaws to restrict Airbnb. But, you know, this whole idea of being able to make the rules for your own building, which was always one of the selling points of strata, that, you know, you can find a community that suits the way you want to live. And now it's everything is just being tossed in the scrap heap. You no longer can guarantee that your building will be residential. You can no longer guarantee that it won't have pets if you don't want to live in the same building as animals. I mean, we are pro-pet. We have pets, but I totally understand why some people just don't want to be around animals.
Mm.
And what do those people do? Go and live in a house? I mean, that would be radical.
Yeah, it's a difficult one, really, because it does go to the heart of strata living.
Yeah.
And there may be some who will say, well, strata communities don't have the right to adapt bad bylaws. You know, what happens if a strata community voted to exclude all Muslims or all Christians or...
That would be discriminatory.
Yeah, well, I guess the pet owners say, well, this bylaw is discriminatory against them.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the things. I mean, you read that judgment from the Horizon ruling, and the senior member went through every aspect in great detail. I mean, for instance, the testimony from the pet owner that she had been told anecdotally that it would be okay to have a dog. He dismissed that. Not that she's saying that she was not trustworthy, but that it was irrelevant.
Mm.
So he went through every aspect of it in great detail, which makes you think that this ruling is going to stick, probably.
Yeah, because he looked at previous rulings, didn't he, as well, in similar cases. And he dismissed some and accepted the conclusions of others. So it was obviously a very careful look at everything, the evidence, as well as, you know, precedent.
Well, I think when he was probably looking at a bench of half a dozen special counsels and and barristers and whatnot, he probably realized his decision was going to be scrutinized to the nth degree.
Yeah.
But it sounds like they're going to go for an appeal as well.
I mean, that's up to their general meeting to decide. But I think if their executive committee attitudes are any measure, then they probably will go for an appeal, yes.
Yeah. It's interesting because in the ruling, I think the member said, because the pet owner had warned them that if they tried to force the issue, if the committee tried to force the issue, she would challenge them at NCAT and she would go for costs. And because they didn't counter that, he is of a mind that she should be allowed the costs.
Mm. And there's also a rumour that she may be getting up a GoFundMe campaign.
Oh, wow.
Because, you know, it's an expensive business. She's having to fund it herself. And basically she's saying, well, she's fighting the case for lots of other pet owners around Sydney who will be watching the verdict very closely.
So I think she'd probably get a fair bit of money.
Yeah, I think she probably will too.
I think people actually like these GoFundMe things because, you know, if they think, I agree with that, you know, then they'll throw some money at it. It makes you feel good for the rest of the day.
Yeah, and particularly things like the GoFundMe campaign to save koalas after the bushfires.
Yeah.
I mean, didn't they aimed for a certain figure and they got like 10 times that?
I believe they aimed for $25,000 and they ended up with $500,000.
It's incredible.
And then there was the guy who lost Australian Survivor. Everybody liked him, and he didn't get the $500,000, so somebody started a GoFundMe campaign, and eventually they had to close it because he'd gone way over the $500,000.
It's fantastic, isn't it? That's real people power, I think, in a really nice way.
Yeah.
But then, you know, we've had Israel Folau raise quite a lot of money at first with his GoFundMe campaign too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it works always.
Yeah. Mm. Well, it's a kind of unfiltered but very real support for people. You know, you don't have an organisation in the way saying, well, we'll take your money, but we'll decide how it gets spent.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, after this, we're going to talk about Neighbours from Hell. In this week's column in the Financial Review, I'm having a quick look at some of those nightmare neighbours that we all encounter at some point or another. And, you know, the first thing I discovered was 600 words is not enough. Because over the years, we've had a few. You know, you've encountered a few nightmare neighbours. The ones that I specifically go for are the party animals and the people who refuse to recycle. They really annoy me. And I've allied them with the people who leave their bags of garbage outside the front door of their apartment.
In do
the
people lift really lot. Do that?
They totally surely do.
Oh, wow.
And one guy wrote to us about somebody, he'd complained about it, and the guy said, well, this has got a dirty nappy in it. I'm not leaving it in the house. It stinks.
Oh, horrible.
Yeah, people are pretty disgusting sometimes.
And what's the problem with party animals? Is it that they just don't invite you to their party, Jimmy?
Well, nobody invites me to a party. There's an issue with party animals generally, there's a subset of party animals. I call them the brat dumpers. That's when parents, you know, they've got a couple of teenage kids, they just don't want them around the house anymore. And so they buy an investment property and put the kids in it for a few years and basically don't care what they do as long as they're not doing it in their house.
Oh, that doesn't sound so good, really.
No, it's a nightmare.
And they're probably not very well house-trained either.
They're not. Well, if they were house-trained, they wouldn't need to find an apartment for them.
Yes.
But they're also not responsive to the complaints that inevitably arise about the behaviour of these people. So I was thinking, you know, who's your favourite or least favourite nightmare neighbour?
I think my most nightmare neighbour was the neighbour who held a party one Sunday afternoon and actually had a band in his apartment, a real-life band.
Right.
And when they started playing, it was incredibly noisy, so noisy that people from other buildings in the neighbourhood, and not even the neighbouring buildings, you know, buildings quite a long way away, all called the police and said, what the hell's going on?
Yeah.
You know, like, I could hear you too the other night from the stadium at Moore Park.
Yeah.
And I'm maybe, I don't know, 5 Ks away. But this was astonishing, like being next door or next but one.
Yeah.
I've never heard anything so loud. Fancy believing that you can actually turn your apartment into a stadium, basically, which is what it was.
Yeah.
I mean, it just, that was astonishing, really.
One of these great combinations of money and stupidity.
Yes, and
a selfishness.
Total, yeah, total disregard for everybody else, really. Yeah.
Yeah, one of my favourites is the barbecue burner. You know, the person who usually has a barbecue right underneath my window and doesn't clean it because that's not what you do in Australia. So before he actually cooks on the barbecue, turns it up to maximum heat to burn off the previous week's fat. So you get all this stale fat smell pouring into your apartment. And I used to live in an apartment block where barbecues were banned on the balconies for that very reason.
Mm.
But these days you can't even mention it without being accused of being un-Australian.
And then, of course, you have drug dealers or sex workers, and they don't make very good neighbours either, I've discovered. Because the drug dealers in particular tend to be attracted to apartments with good security, but then they have visitors at all times of the night and their doors are banging. And if there are any dogs in the area, you know, in the same corridor, the dogs will tend to bark as well.
Yeah.
Because it's strange people coming and going at strange hours.
Yes.
And sex workers the same.
Yes, I remember the story about the dogs barking and the neighbours complaining about the dogs, and it turned out the dogs were barking when the drug dealers' customers were coming. And I remember the building manager went to them and said, look, we know you're drug dealers because of these people who come here at all times of the night. And the person concerned said, how dare you? I am a private detective, and these are my operatives coming to report to me in person. So he went to the police, local police, and said, look, we think this guy's a drug dealer. And they said, we can't just sort of go marching in there until we get some evidence of this. And they suggested that they could organize unofficially that the building be used for training their drug dogs. They said, so we'll put the drug dogs on different floors. We'll just make sure that floor is one of them. And then when the dog goes and sits outside the apartment door, we then have, you know, just cause to knock on the door and go in and check. And the building manager at first thought, oh, this is a really good idea. And then he thought about all the other people living in the building and said, yeah, thanks, but no thanks. But
there might be too many people using recreational drugs to make that a possibility.
And it was funny because they also went to the landlord, a woman lived in another suburb, and said, we're having problems with your tenant and it's causing all sorts of disruption. And she said, well, his lease is up soon, so I just won't renew it. And then she said, what's the problem? And they said, we think he's a drug dealer. And she said, oh, I'm scared now. I'm just going to let him stay.
Oh, no.
But eventually, I think the drug dealer felt he was attracting a bit too much attention. So
yeah, good.
Off he went to ply his trade somewhere else where we didn't live next door to a couple of little dogs.
And by the same token, I mean, what would be the best neighbours in an apartment? I would quite like to live next door to a fabulous chef who was always trying out his or her new recipes at
home. You.
Yes,
you don't want to be living next. You don't want to be living next to somebody who's cooking all the time. You go, oh my god, that smells so good.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah. Yeah,
they have to be generous with it. Then I think that would be my perfect neighbour.
I tell you, one of the worst ones you can have is old people with hearing difficulties. Because you go to them, you're going to buy into the place, and you go to them and say, "Oh, what's it like here?" And they say, "Oh, it's very quiet." You move in and realise you've got the rock band in the next place, and you've got the people upstairs.
But then if you're not noisy, you kind of know that you're not going to disturb them. So they would be a good neighbour if you were a party animal, I suppose.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, it works the other way. I did have a friend who had a neighbour who she was getting progressively more and more deaf. She was in her 90s. And she liked to go to bed about 6, 7 o'clock at night. She'd lie there with the TV on. full volume so she could hear it, and it was driving him mad because, you know, he would go to bed at a reasonable time and she'd still be up watching TV. And I suggested to him, go and invest in a pair of headphones for her. So he did.
Oh, good idea.
And she was so grateful. She said, for the first time, I can actually hear what people are saying on TV. And for the first time in ages, he was getting a full night's sleep. So it worked for everyone.
That's a lovely solution, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, win-win.
But the other noisy neighbor story I remember from way back was people who were being driven mad by tenants in an apartment, and every night all they could hear is tap, 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 very rhythmically. And because the tenants were Southeast Asian, they assumed, well, I mean, it's the most ridiculous thing, they said, we think they're making chopsticks. So, no, they have machines that make chopsticks. But I never worked out what it was, and they eventually drove them out by fair means or foul. And then one night I'm watching a TV show about these guys who had been coerced into making drugs, making pills. And I don't know if you've ever seen what a pill machine is like, but basically it's a funnel at the top that you put powder in, and then it comes out and it gets pressed into little holes. You turn the handle and it goes tap, 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 tap. And that's what they were doing.
Wow.
And finally, one of the other things we'll be talking about on the website this week is the latest list of popular pet names.
Oh, yes, I love those names, yep.
But you had a little story from a movie you saw.
Oh, yes, I went to see Hope Gap the other day because I just love Bill Nye. And he plays a husband who leaves his wife, who's played by Annette Bening, and she's really, really angry. And she goes off and buys a dog that she calls by the same name as her husband, Edward.
Right.
And then they go to see a lawyer to sign the divorce papers, and she's so angry with him, but she brings the dog with her. And when he walks in, she says, "Sit, Edward." And Bill Nye immediately goes over to his chair and sits down.
Probably very obedient anyway. He seems like an obedient sort of chap.
Yeah.
Well, that's it for this week. Thanks very much again, Sue.
Pleasure, Jimmy.
And we'll talk to you all again soon.
Bye.
Bye. If you enjoy these podcasts, and would you still be listening if you didn't, you can subscribe free of charge on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and lots of other podcast platforms. As I said, it's free of charge, and that means the podcast will be delivered directly to your phone, laptop, or computer as soon as it's published. You'll find links at the end of the show notes, that's the related story, on the Flat Chat website. And the website is where you go to find the stories we've been discussing today, as well as about 10 years of archives and, of course, your questions and answers on the Flat Chat forum. Just log in to flat-chat.com.au to ask a question or, even better, answer someone else's. Okay, thanks for listening. I'm Jimmy Thompson. Talk to you again soon.